Welcome. You are listening to a UC Davis Center for Poverty Research Conference podcast. I am the center's deputy director, Marianne Page. In January 2014, the center hosted the War on Poverty Conference. The conference hosted top poverty experts from across the country to discuss the U.S. safety net on the 50-year anniversary of the War on Poverty. In this presentation, Kenneth Che discusses how the 1966 Fair Labor and Standards Act, which expanded protections to some farm workers and increased the minimum wage, impacted hospital costs, employment, and Medicare. Che is a professor of economics and community health at Brown University, as well as a research associate with the National Bureau of Economic Research.
So I'm going to show you results on, some of you have probably seen some of this actually, on the evidence we found on what Medicare has done since it was first passed all the way up through, we're going to stop around the 80s because Medicare gets even more complicated after that. Okay, this is just background. You guys all know this. Medicare was passed in 1965 and it took effect a year after signing in July of 1966. So it covers everyone age 65 and over at the beginning. And at the beginning there was only Part A for hospitals and Part B for outpatient services. And 19 million people enrolled almost immediately. It took a year. They spent that year between signing and implementation to track down everyone they could. Okay, now, so you know, that's not everyone who's eligible. But it turns out it's about 93%, which is better than other government programs have been doing recently. As you might know, someone told me there was a conference on the ACA here recently. They're hoping to enroll 25 million new insured over the next 10 years. So this is pretty remarkable what they did. I think these guys are heroic in a lot of ways if you read the literature on what the Medicare administration did. So there's this huge bureaucratic effort to get all these people enrolled. Just so you know, Medicare's first started becoming more complex in 1973. At the beginning of 1973, Medicare was extended to everyone who was under age 65 but disabled, as, for example, having been on SSDI for 24 months. If you're on SSDI for 24 months, you're automatically eligible for Medicare. Some people might know today, if you have renal problems or renal failure, you're automatically eligible for Medicare. So starting in 1973, there are going to be people under the age of 65 also eligible for Medicare. And I'll discuss that some. So since this is really about the war on poverty, and I don't want to just talk about health, even though most of this talk is about health, here's the classic quote that Lyndon Johnson passed on signing of the Medicare legislation. You can see he's not just talking about health here, he's also talking about the poverty and the destruction of savings among the elderly, and actually he even gets into the destruction of savings among the children of the elderly. Now, I looked up as many statistics I could find on poverty. This is going to get into health very soon. But I think we can infer, even though someone should say this much more carefully, that Medicare alone also reduced poverty, not just Social Security, because when you look at poverty rates after for people age 65 and over, there's a paper out of Columbia recently that's been cited by Fox and Waldfogel and a bunch of other people. They just do projections, okay? But in those projections, what you see is in 1967, in the absence of all programs that existed as of 1967, they project that the poverty rate would have been 60% among the elderly. The actual in 1967 was 35%, and I think one conclusion is that's likely mostly due to Social Security. But then what you see is the official poverty rate for the 65 and older fell by a half in just 6 years, between 67 and 73, and it's actually been incredibly stable since then. That's almost surely got to be due to Medicare, because we collected all the data on Social Security, too, as a competing hypothesis. The Social Security changes can't explain those changes between 67 and 73. The expansions weren't that big, and they weren't for just the 65 and over. So someone should study this pretty carefully. The paper doesn't talk too much about that. But now let's get into what we're going to study. We're actually going to study trying to evaluate this major health insurance program at the time of its introduction. There are a lot of things that can go into this. I'll focus more on what Medicare did, but a lot of reasons this is interesting to study, and it's historical, so I'm not saying if you did the same thing today, you'd get the same effect, okay? This is what happened in 66, 67. But the margin along which insurance is changing is actually, you'll see, is along the extensive margin. That's a big chunk of it. It's a big growth in the number of insured. Okay. Whereas a lot of the other, like Rand Health Insurance experiments or other experiments we've done, the margin's been very different. It's either been changing the quality, the prices for healthcare, Some, like the recent stuff in Oregon, is insurance, but it's for a particular group. So one thing you're going to see throughout this presentation is the effect of health insurance changes depending on what the margin is of who's affected. That's incredibly clear. And not just the margin of who's affected, but what's causing the uptake. Is it a supply change or a demand change? Okay, you'll see that here also. Now, the other thing that's advantageous about the fact of setting Medicare when it was first passed is we're going to observe all the patterns in every outcome before Medicare was passed. Okay, that's often not the case with studies that do what we're doing, which is trying to use variation by age. Some people call it an age discontinuity analysis, which is when people tend to look at when eligibility shifts in a very nonlinear way based on some kind of criteria, they tend to only have the data after the program was passed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's only what we call a cross-sectional analysis, and there's no counterfactual for what it looked like beforehand. You'll see how we try and use the data beforehand to actually do projections of what Medicare did, even away from the discontinuity, away from age 65. Of course, that requires assumptions, but visually, you'll see whether you believe those assumptions. That's key here. Everything I'm doing is trying to be as transparent as possible. Okay. So that required getting age-specific data on everything we wanted, which is hospital insurance, utilization, and health outcomes. And it turns out no one had done that for this period. Okay. Don't ask me why. And when I say age, they had done age categories before, but usually for things like health outcomes like mortality, and we'll show you how getting finer age data is very helpful in ruling out competing hypotheses such as Social Security benefits and Medicaid. The pre-Medicare patterns, the patterns in 1964, 63, et cetera, are also, as I said, hopefully going to help us infer the effects of Medicare further away from the discontinuity, because age 65 is also a different margin than if you expand health insurance to people in their 70s or 80s. Okay. So a lot of figures are going to look like this. Okay. So I'm going to spend a little time on this, and then everything should flow from this. Okay. So this is the first time, meaning I first presented this graph 4 years ago. But before we presented this, this was not known, apparently. This is literally from National Health Interview Survey data. They released what happened is they finally released the pre-1968 data about 4 years ago. This is the percent self-reporting that they have hospital insurance for Medicare, I'm sorry, what will be Part A over age 65 by age. So the x-axis is age. There's a red vertical line at 65. I actually prefer not to put red vertical lines there. I did it because I wrote this, I did this 4 years ago. I'd like you guys to figure out where the red line should go. The dotted line is hospital insurance rates by age in the 1963 fiscal year, so about 3 years before Medicare was passed. The solid line is in the year right after Medicare was passed, so the 1968 fiscal year. Okay, for better or worse, the National Health Interview Survey only asks the insurance question every about 4 years. Okay, not every year. Fortunately, they ask the utilization question every year. Okay. Now, just as a point of comparison, I could have done it for every 4 years. I'm showing you 1986 because you'll see that things change a lot in the late 70s through the mid-80s. That's the gray line up top. Now, if you look at it, it's pretty clear. What you can see, okay, first of all, what you see is that insurance has been growing over time. Okay, that's if you plot the lines. But let's focus on the dotted line and the solid line. That's before and after Medicare. What you see is the patterns by age are very similar in hospital insurance other than a mean shift, right? Generally speaking, they're almost parallel. An econometrician like that would write that down as a time effect, right? A time effect shifts everything at every age. There's only one point at which there's no longer a parallel shift. Oops, my fault. It's at the vertical line. You get the point. Okay. So now, what the analysis will do is, if I only had the data after 1965, so I had 1968, you would try and fit some kind of polynomial to this age-specific data, let's say in adult ages, and say, okay, I would project out that hospital insurance would continue to decline at some kind of quadratic rate, and this is the effect. A lot of studies even just focus on just around here. Okay, what we're saying is that is true. Oh gosh. But we also think that we're learning something from the dotted line. It looks a lot like a parallel shift. Now, of course, there's an assumption underlying this that the solid line would look like the dotted line with the time effect in the absence of Medicare. Mm-hmm. But you at least know what we're assuming, if By the way, we feel very comfortable about this is the insurance effect at 65. But once we start looking at what's going on at age 70, you're going to start wondering, would this line continue to look like that at age 70? And that's what you're doing when you do a discontinuity. When you're only going to use the discontinuity, you're often just willing to do inference right near the threshold. But that's a very narrow effect, okay? So I think that's transparent. You can decide for yourself. Okay. Now, this is already getting into how things change even by the mid-80s. As you can see, that the so-called cross-sectional discontinuity at age 65 is much smaller by 1986. It's about 8% increase in hospital insurance between age 64 and 65, and it's very different from right after Medicare was passed. We know from the data that a lot of this growth is both Medicare for the non-elderly and Medicaid, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when the studies that tended to use data from the 80s and 90s, they're going to get you a different effect. What I'm also going to show you is something else is driving utilization there, too. This is just insurance, but the utilization margin is going to change also. The other thing you'll see, and this came up in the ACA thing, I'm sure, is do you notice this aging out of insurance and the length of time it takes to get back into insurance is growing? So, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not using the thing. Okay, I'm just going to... So it's growing, and as you can guess, today this I don't know what they call it these days. It's not a donut, but it's gotten bigger, and that's the group that benefits the most from the ACA in the short run. Okay, but the main thing I want to point out is that discontinuity, even by the mid-80s, has changed. Okay, now if I just take the difference of the post-data and the pre-data, which is just difference in the solid line and the dotted line, you get that. Okay, so... if I'm going to use this data to say what's the insurance effect, what I'm saying is that this trend by age would have continued this way. I feel pretty comfortable that's the effect of Medicare at age 65, 66. And you can see on the extensive margin, insurance rates went up by 25% percentage points. Okay, so that's 1 in 4 newly got covered. I feel reasonably comfortable at age 72, it's a bigger effect. Now, to believe that, you have to believe that this line would have continued this way. That's for you to decide. Okay, I'm just pointing that out because I want to be able to say something about things farther away from the discontinuity. If you don't like that stuff, ignore those parts of the tables. Just focus on 65 to 66. Okay? Okay. The other thing I want to point out is, I don't have time to present it, this discontinuity is bigger for the disabled. When Medicare was first passed, it's bigger for the disabled, the poor, the less educated, and minorities, African Americans. By the mid-80s, that's not true anymore. By the mid-80s, the gap, the growth at age 65 in hospital insurance is almost equal by race, education, et cetera, and you can imagine it's because of the programs that came in for the non-elderly were focusing on those groups. So again, the margin's totally different by the mid-80s. Okay, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this. This is just fitting regressions to what I just showed you, okay? And trying to be reasonably general on the polynomial we're going to let fit this data. Some would say, well, I don't even know why you're fitting a polynomial. That looks like a straight line. But we're going to literally try and be as general as possible. It doesn't matter what we do. We get the same estimate. You can kind of tell from that graph. The other thing I want to point out is this is all that we... but having this much data before and after and with a lot of covariates, because this is individual level data, means we can do a lot of robustness checks and falsification checks. For one thing, for instance, we can run this regression not controlling for individual characteristics like education, race, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and we can run it controlling for it and see if we get the same effect, and we always do. In fact, usually what happens is the standard errors just fall, meaning we get more precise estimates. We think we have enough clusters for clustering. We have about 50 clusters, but I'm just looking at Doug. No one else in this room knows what I'm talking about other than Colin, if Colin's here.
All of our students back there.
Oh, okay, sorry. I was thinking of the non-economists in the room. And we can test for discontinuities in every year beforehand, too, right? There should never be a discontinuity at age 65 before 1967, and the discontinuities should only happen after. There's a lot of stuff here. Okay. This is what happens when you do that. All I'm doing here is I'm fitting those regressions to those patterns you just saw. When this is unadjusted, this is the discontinuities at age 65 to 69, 70 to 74, 75 to 80. You can do whatever you want. We just wanted a simple way to summarize it. This is for all races. The first three columns adjust for no other individual covariates. The second three columns adjust basically for the kitchen sink. And the first column A of each one is the discontinuity in the pre-period. Okay, and you see nothing. And that's just saying it's what you saw on the graph. It's following the insurance rates at age 65, 66, 67 are following the trend from ages 50 to 64. And then this is the change in the discontinuity from before to after. And you see what you saw in the graph, about a 24% increase, percentage point increase in hospital insurance at age 65 to 69 with a T ratio of 19 with clustering and all that, because you saw how smooth that data is. And it's bigger at older ages, 30, 39%. If you don't like that assumption that things would follow that pattern given the polynomial, then you just don't like my 39% for 75 to 80, fine, okay? I'll point out there was no discontinuity in the pre-period for those ages, okay? Now, when you adjust for the covariates, you can see the estimates don't change hardly at all. The point estimates don't change. All that's happening is the T-ratios get a little bigger because those covariates are sweeping out a lot of the residual variation but aren't highly correlated. Well, they're not correlated at all with the age discontinuity. Okay, every graph after this now is every outcome. Okay, first outcome you might ask is, did people use it? So they got coverage. Did they actually go to the hospital and were they admitted? So this is being a discharge from a hospital, so you had to stay overnight to be in this. This is from the National Health Interview Survey, but then what we do is we follow this up with the National Hospital Discharge Survey. Those people in the know that the interview survey is self-reported, the discharge survey is based on what the hospitals report. Okay, we're gonna get the same results with both. The issue with the discharge data is you don't have data before Medicare was passed. You only have the data after Medicare was passed. With the interview survey, we have the data before. Okay, so this is hospital discharge rates by age. The dotted line is 1963 to 64, so that's before Medicare. The solid line is 1969 to 70. I was surprised to see this, because remember, hospital insurance is growing even at the younger ages. Remember that? But you see utilization is right on top of each other. Okay, it peaks when you're an infant. This is not being born in the hospital. This is getting admitted after you're born. Okay, then it falls. And then it increases for both ages, before and after Medicare by age, but pretty similarly before and after Medicare. And again, this is a little surprising because hospital insurance did go up. I put a vertical line here. I honestly think if I didn't put a vertical line there, you would say it was somewhere to the right that they decouple. Now, that doesn't look as smooth as the hospital insurance, but you're going to see in the regressions, that's actually a big amount. And it's actually pretty precisely estimated, not like T ratios of 20, more like T ratios of 4, okay? So that's what this does. Oh, no. Then I do one other thing. Remember, the utilization data I have every year, not just every 4 years. So I can even do changes before Medicare was passed and changes after, not just levels before and after. So this is, you can think of these as like diffs. But this before and after, the dotted line is the change between 63 and 65. The solid line is the change between 63 and 69. If I difference these two lines, that'd be the change between 65 and 69. Okay? And you can see, again, what you saw, which is before and after Medicare was passed, the changes are pretty flat. There aren't that many changes in hospital utilization. But they decouple after age 65. Here it's starting to get a little noisier. By the way, all these graphs are unadjusted for anything. If I start adjusting these, they actually smooth out a little bit. They get even more obvious that there's a disconnect there. Okay. And then, now, if I do this kind of differencing strategy, now we're saying the utilization gap is something like these things at these points, which if you don't like, then ignore that part of the tables. These are the estimates you get on discharge rates. I'll just summarize it because it's not easy for everyone to understand how you convert discharge rates into hospital insurance rates. But one can think of this as, here's the simplest way I could explain it, is given the changes in insurance, if everyone only goes into the hospital one time between age 65 and 70, which is not true, some will go in two, some will go in three, but if everyone only went in once, you could only rationalize that growth in utilization at ages 65 to 69 if half of the people went in. Now, of course, it's going to be some went in none, some went in one, two, three, but you can say that's still a big number. Okay? And again, the estimates don't change when I do not adjust for anything or when I kitchen sink it for everything that's in the NHIS, which is a lot like a CPS. Okay, now this is what we're now getting into stuff most people are interested in. I wanted to at least show you there was a first stage, right? Insurance went up, utilization went up, okay? Now we're going to look at outcomes. Before I get to mortality, there is one outcome in the National Health Interview Survey that I actually think is worth looking at. A lot of people poo-poo it because they think it's noisy, self-reporting stuff. Generally speaking, that should work against us, okay? This is, did you report having a limited activity? A lot of people call it the ADL rate or whatever. I don't know what to call it because I'm not sure it's just a disability, but it is something. And this is the same graph you saw before, but now the outcome is self-reported limited activity rates by age. And these are now the differences, the change between 63 and 65 and the change between 63 and 69. You can see that before Medicare's passed and after Medicare's passed, the changes are very similar by age. Okay, this is, again, is unadjusted for anything. Around age 65, all of a sudden, you see that the ADL rates start falling from before to after Medicare, but they aren't in the years preceding Medicare. Now, you might say, well, what the heck is that? Okay, I actually looked at this. This isn't like, the natural reaction would be, oh, it's got to be age 75, 80, 65. It's not. It's like sometimes it's every 2 years of age, sometimes it's every three. I don't know why it's happening. One thing I was mildly relieved about is the dotted line. It's not as oscillating, but it tends to happen at the same points. The main point is, they're pretty similar before and after, they're not, so always have in your head, and these are big, by the way, have in your head that, and this is, to get into the survey, you have to be alive, okay? So have in mind that, I'm going to show you there's a big mortality reduction. So that means even among the people who survive, they have less reporting of limited activities. Usually it works the other way. Like most self-selection models say, it's going to be the weak ones are going to be the ones who die, right? So in the post period, the more weak ones surviving. Okay, so the fact that you see that ADL rates went down means that they're not the ones who like literally would be miserable if you kept them alive. Okay, now when I show you the cost-benefit analysis, I'm only going to show you the cost per life year saved. The cost per quality-adjusted life year should be even smaller, because I'm not adjusting for this right now, because I don't like the way the literature adjusts for it. I shouldn't say that because probably some people use it, but I don't know how to call that a quality, but it should be understood. Oh, just as an aside, the way we know that this has to be Medicare, when we start getting to graphs like this, we know it has to be Medicare because relative to Medicaid or Social Security because the discontinuity is at age 65, and also, when you start doing the analysis by region, unfortunately, the National Health Interview Survey only gives you regions. It doesn't give you exact state unless you get proprietary access. But we already know that the vast majority of southern states adopted Medicaid late, okay? Like 69, 70. The vast majority of northern states adopted it immediately. So we can do this change before the South adopted, and if we see that same pattern in the South, it can't be Medicaid because none of them had Medicaid, or very few had Medicaid. The patterns are even bigger in the South than in the North, okay? So let's move on. Okay, so now let's do mortality. The nice thing about mortality is, unless there's huge fraud in death certificates, you're dead. Okay, there's a huge literature on, do I trust the NHIS data on ADL? Okay, here it's more, you just have to believe that the U.S. kept decent records on who died, okay? So now, what the other thing this allows for is we can start looking at other countries too, because I can't get NHIS data for Britain or Canada or France, but what I can get is their death records, okay? Well, the U.S. is the only one who did this age-specific expansion of a national health insurance program. Every other country already had health insurance for everyone, or in the case of Canada, we're rolling out health insurance for everyone, but not age-specific, okay? So I'm going to show you first patterns in the trends, just so you know that when I show you the age-specific discontinuities, they all line up, okay? We're not finding something that's not in the data. And let's continue. Okay. I'm going to blast through this. The three sets of countries we decided to use as comparisons were England and Wales France, and Canada. Those are their health insurance programs. The only one that's a little more changing during our period is Canada. Not because they technically actually everyone had hospital insurance by 1961, but Quebec was the last to adopt. But it wasn't age specific; it was for everyone. Okay. And then for outpatient services, they also provinces started adopting in a staggered way, but again, it was not age specific. Okay. So this is what happens if we do what the previous ledger kind of did, but didn't do even for five-year age categories. For some reason, the previous ledger tends to use 10-year age categories, which is fine. So all I'm doing here, I just want to show you in trends, there's something visible, and then we'll get to the discontinuities. This is just the difference in mortality rates for those aged 65 to 69 minus the mortality rates for those aged 60 to 64, right? Because that's the margin along which Medicare happens. That's the top line by year from 1954 to 1989 for the United States. I should have removed the vertical line, but I think you would have said something happened in the late 60s, okay? Just as a point of comparison, I showed the exact same graph, but now the relative mortality rate is those aged 60 to 64 minus those aged 55 to 59 because they're not covered by Medicare, okay? And you can see you don't see the same pattern, okay? The next thing I do is I do that, now this is doing it by cause of death because this is gonna be really a big deal when we get to the age-specific data. The top line is heart disease death. The gray line is cancer, essentially neoplasm. And the next line down is stroke. Bottom line is diabetes. These are the four biggest causes of death during this period. You can see almost everything's driven by heart disease deaths and stroke. You can, if anything, you see cancer starts to go up. This is a well-known thing, right? Like, everyone knows. You have to die of something, okay? So as heart disease deaths and cancer and stroke deaths go down, cancer deaths are gonna go up because someone has to claim that death. We're gonna actually fit competing risk models to this. I'm not gonna go through all that, right? That's too much for this, but you're gonna see that it's pretty clear that the growth in cancer deaths is due to the heart disease and stroke reductions. Okay. This is what happens if we do the dumb thing, the easiest thing to do with these four countries, which is now look at the difference in mortality rates for 65 to 69 versus 60 to 64 over time for the four countries. We're using log differences here because it was easier to put them on the same scale across the four countries. You can see they're all on the noisy side, but only one is breaking before and after the red line. The other ones are actually tending to trend up, which just means that in all these other countries, 65 to 69-year-old mortality rates are tending to grow a little bit relative to 60, 64. But when I saw that, I was like, it's strange that the historical literature went through this weird phase where the early work really always found that Medicare reduced mortality, and somehow economists starting in the mid-2000s started to say, no, it didn't. I don't know what I'm just saying I probably line up more with the early crowd. Now, where I really line up with the early crowd is when we do age discontinuities. Okay, so no one's done this before. These are the same graphs you saw before. Now the outcome is just the mortality rate, okay? So I'll use this. The mortality rate, you can see, that's fine. This is for the US. The dotted line is the change between 63 and 65. The solid line is the change between 63 and 69 by age. And you can see there's a decoupling. This is just for US whites because I wanted to make them more comparable to the UK and France. Those gaps get even bigger when I include everyone. Okay, and you can see that there's definitely something going on after age 65. Mortality shifting down in 60 after Medicare is passed, and it's actually big. It's quite big. Now, if I do England and Wales, nothing. If I do France, not much. Now, if I do, what I'm going to do is, since these lines line up pretty well beforehand, I'm now just going to do the 69 to 65 difference, just so I can have everything on one graph without many lines. So this is cause of death. The solid line is all deaths, and then I have lines for heart disease deaths, stroke deaths, and cancer deaths. And what you can see is that, again, just like you saw with the trends data, most of the gains are heart disease deaths. The second most is stroke deaths, and then you can see cancer deaths are actually rising. Now, this is where you can see where the competing risk is gonna start coming in. You can see what seems to be going on if I try and interpret this. I can fit this statistically, which we did right before this conference. It looks like as when you age into being eligible for Medicare, heart disease deaths go down pretty dramatically, okay? Stroke deaths a little bit, almost quite a bit, but not quite as much. And then what happens is in the early 70s, okay, at age in the early 70s, then the heart attacks start happening. Or you start dying of cancer, okay? Then you survive that, then heart deaths go down again, okay? That's kind of how a competing risk model would work, okay? So what it would say is you're pushing off deaths until you get a heart attack later and die, or you get cancer, and that'll take you, okay? It would be disturbing. Sorry, it's doing that thing again. Let's put it this way. It would be disturbing if the solid line was always lower, because that means people are living to age 100, okay? They are dying, they're just dying later. From that, you can do life expectancy calculations, and it's a big number, and I'll show you that in a second. This is what happens if I do the same changes for the US and England and Wales and France. Now, as you know, you already knew that mortality for ages 65 to 69 are worsening in England and France. I'm not sure, I mean, someone could look at that and say, whoa, there's some weird discontinuity for those countries where it's getting worse. They're pretty similar to each other. I don't know what's going on. I'd have to do a whole study of England and France. What I can tell is it's different from the US. Okay. So now let's get to the cooler stuff. So now we can construct birth cohort specific survival curves because we're in this interesting case. Usually when you do survival curves, you have to use a cross section, right? Because most of us aren't dead yet, right? With these guys, they're almost all dead. Okay, for certain ages. So I can literally, other than migration, which isn't a big deal for these birth cohorts, immigration, I can plot out what fraction of them are still alive by age 70, by age 75, by age 80, because I have the universe of all deaths, and I know how many people were living there at age 64. So I can plot out the survival curves from age 64 on, okay? Now, I'm going to do that for some birth cohorts. Now, unfortunately, the U.S. microdata only starts in 1960. So that means that the first cohort at which I observe at age 64 is the 1896 birth cohort, okay? That means the margin along which I do these survival curves, meaning I'm gonna get you a life expectancy gain, is the 65 to 70 year age range. Why? Because the 1896 cohort is the oldest one I have. All I get from them is they're not eligible for Medicare until ages 70 to 71. For every cohort after that, they're eligible for Medicare at age 69, 68, 67. Then once you get to the 1902 cohort, they're always eligible, okay? So, but I can compare the 1896 cohort to the 1902 cohort, for instance, see what the life expectancy gain was, and also compare that to England and France to make sure I'm not picking up something random, okay? So there what you see is the life expectancy gain is about a year between the 1896 and 1899 cohort, conditional on surviving to age 64, and another like 2/10 of a year from, 1903 cohort actually, but from the 1899 to 1903 cohort, and if you do the exact same thing for England and France, you see nothing across these cohorts, okay? So now, by the way, that's a huge number, because 1 year for an entire cohort, well, how many of them benefited from Medicare? It turns out if you divide it by the number of people that were in the cohort who supposedly got the new Medicare, it ends up being about 5 to 7 years. Okay, now that's not crazy because what you saw in those previous graphs is heart disease deaths just drop off and they don't rebound until age 70 or 71. So it's saying you're pushing that off. Okay, now we also know how many more people were admitted and we know what the cost per admission was. Okay, now that doesn't count for all the other things that Medicare do. Amy Finkelstein has a lot of work saying that Medicare does a lot of other things, but at least on the admission versus the life year, you can calculate what the gain was. Oh. Yeah, there it is. Okay, and you end up with about $210 per life year in 1982, $84. So I don't know what that'd be today. Is that like 500 today? You guys know better than me. Okay, just so you know, even if it was five times bigger, which there's no way it is, it's still 1,000, okay? To give you a sense, everyone in this room, unless you're depressed, would be willing to pay $1,000 to extend your life for a year, okay? Even the depressed ones would do it. And also keep in mind that probably cost per quali is even lower, right? Because we know that the ADL rates went down. Okay, so these are healthier people that are surviving, weirdly enough. One baseline is Britain has literally a death panel. It's called NICE.
the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. When I call it a death panel, I just mean they actually use scientific evidence to say how much we're willing to reimburse you for a procedure. And the rule they use as of 3 years ago, I should look it up again now, was they'll reimburse you £30,000 for any intervention that saves one life year. You just have to cover the rest. So this would be very good. Now, on the competing risk side, when I compare the 1903 to the 1896 cohort, so what we're really picking up is what's happening to life expectancy for those people who got Medicare at age 65 versus age 70, you see that two-thirds of the gains are due to heart disease, and over one-third is due to stroke. The reason it's over one-third, that adds up to over 100%, is cancer deaths go up. Okay, so you could conclude that Medicare increased cancer. I think the thing to conclude is Medicare reduced deaths, mostly through heart disease and stroke, and you have to die of something. So it's going to be cancer. I don't mean to sound so flippant. I'm just trying to get through this. I don't think it's cool to die of cancer. I'm just saying that, like, this is a well-known thing. One would study what's the effect of the treatments for cancer by looking at the age of death for cancer, accounting for the fact that people are surviving longer. Okay. Now, this was the paper I was going to present and realized it was too narrow for this conference, so I hope I didn't freak out my discussant, Doug. I'm just going to summarize it, because there's a literature that says that Medicare increased costs a lot, okay? And we're not finding that. I mean, we're not finding, it did increase costs, by the way, a lot, but it had a big benefit. The question is, why are we getting smaller cost increases than some of these other studies? A lot of these studies were using aggregate data. They were not age-specific, because if you actually look at the Social Security Administration's calculations from the Social Security Bulletin, they were not finding nearly as big an increase in Medicare costs from 65 to 72, and they had administrative data, than the more recent studies that have used hospital-level data, which covers everyone. There's no age-specific data in the hospital-level data. What I can tell you is we got very fascinated about that, because I'm a labor economist, actually, and I happened to know when I was researching this Medicare thing that the 1966 Fair Labor Standards Act, the extensions that were done, there could have been a talk on this, extended minimum wage to hospital employees for the first time in February 1st, 1967. Now you'd say, well, hospital employees, they're not paid the minimum wage. Well, yeah, actually, the non-doctors and nurses are, okay? So for instance, a study done by the Department of Labor, which actually surveyed the hospitals, found that 40% of all non-supervisory hospital employees in the South were paid below what became the minimum wage. Those numbers are only 7 and 5% in the Northeast and in the West. So there's a lot of variation by state. The other thing that's interesting is that same Department of Labor study found that employment rates in non-federal hospitals rose 21% in the South at the same time, which works against what labor demand theory predicts, 16% in the U.S. as a whole. This study that I'm just summarizing tried to get at how much of that is monopsony and how much of that is literally they're using Medicare to pay for this higher wage labor. How can they use Medicare? Well, Medicare reimbursed hospitals based on reasonable costs back then, and hospitals literally could transfer the wage bill increase to Medicare by increasing the per diem charge for Medicare-eligible patients. So it was completely legit back then. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the Social Security Bulletin data, I know from the hospital-level data, the biggest component of the cost increase at hospitals was personnel expenses during that period. If you look at total costs, it's like 80% of the growth in total costs is personnel expenses, okay? Not everything else. And then if you look at the Medicare Social Security data from the Social Security Bulletin, the biggest increase in hospital charges on a bill was actually the daily rate charged to Medicare patients, meaning the hotel bill, okay? So we think we had our theory. Oh, okay, I better crank. Bottom line is we collected the panel data on the University of Hospitals from 1960 to 1972, and we basically think that what you're picking up when you pick up that cost increase at the hospital level is mostly due to the minimum wage. Okay, but that'd be a whole different paper. I only have 5 minutes, so I want to get into the time changes since the 60s. There's been huge changes in the marginal beneficiary. I know this is hard to see. Okay, I'm just going to speak loud. This is the black-white gap in hospital insurance rates before Medicare, right after Medicare, and then in 1986. So when you see a big black-white gap, that means blacks have less hospital insurance than whites. Before Medicare, that gap stays the same before and after age 65. After Medicare, you see what I already said, which is blacks benefit more than whites because they have lower hospital insurance rates before age 64. But what you see by 1986 is it's neutral. Why? Because a lot of programs have come in at these lower ages to fill in those gaps. You see the same thing for education. So by the mid-80s, if people use age discontinuities, they're not picking up something that's going to affect African-Americans more than whites, other than if the quality of the insurance changed, meaning Medicare is better than Medicaid, but it won't be on the expensive market. You see equally sharp patterns for disability. Here I showed you three graphs because this is before Medicare, so the disabled had less hospital insurance, both at younger ages and elderly ages. Then a lot of that disappears right after Medicare is passed, and then what you see is these gaps down here start increasing even by 1974, which they should, because Medicare is coming in to cover the non-elderly. Okay. The main point is, by 1978, Medicare is pretty neutral when it comes to disability. So that margin's changed dramatically. This is hospital discharge rates over the cycle. This is saying that the effect of the age discontinuity margin changes even with the cycle, not with time. This is the discontinuity and the likelihood that you're discharged from the hospital at age 65 over time with 95% confidence intervals. You can see the peak was right after Medicare was passed. And then it's been declining since, as these other programs have come in. But the times that you get big discontinuities again, bigger, are during recessions, not shockingly. What we're currently trying to figure out is that because the people who lose jobs under age 65 are having a hard time finding insurance, so the margin gets bigger when you age into age 65, because if you're unemployed at age 63, you might be in big trouble if you're not yet eligible for Medicaid. And how much of that is a difference in utilization, you know, something else. Okay? But this is saying, even ignoring the margin change, time matters. Okay? It tends to look like Medicare is more important during recessions. And then that's just saying that that's true. That's particularly true of admission due to heart disease, which is a little odd. And then I'm going to show you something that's equally important because my co-author, Dae-ho Kim, wrote a whole thesis on this. He finds by starting in the 80s, that cost-benefit ratio, which I found was, that we found was really small right after Medicare was passed, that starts growing dramatically by the 70s and 80s. Okay, by the 80s, he's finding that if you use the age discontinuity margin, the amount of spending, the reduction in mortality you get for the amount of spending is tiny. Okay, now let me explain why I think that is. In 1983, they passed the prospective payment system, which actually gave hospitals incentives. You have to read his paper to know why, but it gave hospitals incentives to use high average cost procedures on people who are eligible for Medicare, because they reimbursed the patient for average cost. Okay? And economists in the room know that's not a good thing, because you should price on the margin. Okay? So if they've already paid the fixed cost for the surgical room, the training, et cetera, you might as well use that thing. Okay, so the one we looked at before his thesis was coronary artery bypass graft. The reason we looked at that is there was a paper in 2007 by Card, Dopkin, and Mestis that found big discontinuities in CABG at age 65. What we find, this is estimating that discontinuity for national data every year. There was no discontinuity in CABG use at age 65 in any year between 1971 and 1983-84. All of a sudden, and the CARD data is from here, okay? All of the growth is between 84 and 88, which is right after the Medicare prospective payment system was passed. Dae-ho Kim, my co-author, actually beats the crap out of this. And what he finds is they definitely did that. And what they did is they brought in more people who had fewer comorbidities and gave them CABG. And then they brought in more people who had hardly any comorbidities, gave them angioplasty, and they used medical therapies on less people. And it works exactly the way average costs work. Okay. So I don't want you to say Medicare's always been great. There's a weird thing, and then I'm not even going to talk about Part C and Part D. Okay? That's even more of a weird kludge. Okay? So I'll ignore that. So that leads to this finding that by the late 1980s, there are relatively small age discontinuities in hospital insurance and discharge rates, but relatively large discontinuities in the utilization of surgery for heart disease, for instance. And that's even as angioplasty is becoming more available in the 80s. Okay? And the mortality discontinuities for heart disease don't improve. That's my co-author's paper. So it looks like they're using more money for worse outcomes, or at least not better outcomes. But there I would argue that the discontinuity at age 65 is a supply response, not a demand response. Okay? What's going on in the 60s and early 70s is a demand shift, like demand response. Like, I'm now eligible, I want it. What's going on here is what the hospitals are deciding, or the doctors. So that also matters. Like, what the reason this paper's taking us forever is we built an economic model to explain this stuff, but you have to be really careful, because you don't want to say doctors are bad, because they're, it might be administrators doing this, okay? I think I'm out of time. Okay, so those are all the things that become more complex over the last 20 years. Okay, sorry.
I'm Ann Stevens, the director of the Center for Poverty Research at UC Davis, and I want to thank you for listening. The Center is one of three federally designated poverty research centers in the United States. Our mission is to facilitate nonpartisan academic research on domestic poverty, to disseminate this research, and to train the next generation of poverty scholars. Core funding comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For more information about the Center, visit us online at poverty.ucdavis.edu.